Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's no secret the digital world has thrown journalism for a loop. Major, highly successful newspapers suddenly discovered that their business model would no longer work. Revenues fell, and as papers scrambled to respond, newsrooms were decimated. In 2018, after years of downsizing, one in four American newspapers experienced layoffs. And of newspapers making cuts that year, almost a third did so at least twice. But the shift to digital hasn't just impacted print. Radio newsrooms outside of public radio have been walking away from the news for years. And local TV, even some network operations, have had to bow to economic pressures to change the nature of how news is gathered and reported, often with an impact on quality and on what stories are covered. And news consumers have contributed to this alarming trend by turning to social media to get news from sources that don't always subscribe to journalistic standards. Yes, there really is fake news out there. The diminishment of traditional news outlets and the uncertain quality of news obtained from questionable sources is a dangerous trend in a democracy. We need access to news at the local, state, and national levels, and that news needs to be a reliable source of verifiable facts if voters are to make informed decisions and if governments are to be held accountable. Report for America is attempting to change this narrative. They will be placing 250 reporters in newsrooms across the country this year and plan to have 1,000 more in place by 2024. These reporters will be following critically important beats in 28 states or more and Puerto Rico, supplementing already working news personnel, as well as serving vulnerable communities. Steve Waldman is the president and the co-founder of Report for America, and he joins us now from New York. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Alexandra Watts is a Report for America journalist working at Mississippi Public Broadcasting, and she joins us via Skype. Where are you this morning, Alexandra?
I am in the Mississippi Delta in a town called Greenville, Mississippi.
Yeah, well, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Susan King is the dean of the Hussman School of Media and Journalism at UNC in Chapel Hill, and she joins us from studios there. Thank you for being with us.
Enjoying being with you.
Nice to have you. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Susan, let me start with you, because prior to your becoming dean of the Hussman School of Journalism and Media at UNC Chapel Hill, you served as White House correspondent for ABC News. You've hosted the Diane Rehm Show in the past and other NPR shows. You've reported for CBS, NBC, CNN. It's pretty much all of them. I painted a pretty bleak picture of the state of journalism a moment ago. Did I exaggerate it?
So I'm an optimist. I have to start that way. Okay. That's why I've had so many jobs.
You've had so many jobs because you're in broadcasting.
Well, that's true. But I also am a woman who was the first in every newsroom, and I'm so thrilled to be able to have a career now that is passionately involved in the future of journalism rather than crying, in my beer. It is bleak. One out of five newspapers has been closed since 2004. We're doing the News Desert research out of the Hussman School. Great former journalist herself, Penny Abernathy, has been documenting this change. But people like Steve Waldman, who on this program, who has also been involved with studies about the information gap in America, are not saying, let's give up. There is a passion. There is a dynamism. There is a change. We're in a moment of real transition. When I'm the optimist, I say that. When I'm the pessimist, I say we're in a moment of total confusion. We don't know what the economic model is. But something is emerging, I believe, that is very strong. And we must emphasize the crisis, particularly in local news, because we must have information to keep our democracy strong. So you're not exaggerating that much, but it's not all bleak.
Do you think that news consumers are aware of the, certainly it hasn't been hidden from anybody. And if you were subscribed to the daily paper, you've noticed that it's thinner than it used to be everywhere in the country. Do you think that news consumers, however, are aware of the struggles that news producers are experiencing?
Depends whether they're reading the paper or they're on Twitter. So I teach a class of 300 in the fall. Last night I gave my lecture 150. None of them read a newspaper. None of them watch television. I don't know whether they get NPR. They are on social media. That's the way they get their information. They don't see a crisis. They expect to get what they want free. And so that's one of the big issues.
That's part of the crisis.
And so I think a lot of newspaper people do. I think people of my generation are really worried what's going on. They find the tone of social media very disturbing. They miss that strong daily newspaper. But I want to say one other thing that has emerged. We in North Carolina know that the two newspapers, the Charlotte Observer and the News and Observer, both great newspapers, are, you know, just faint images of what they were 20 years ago. But FAE and where I am right now, WUNC Radio, amazingly strong stations, both in their community and NPR. And both are very strong and growing with their audiences. So we have pluses and minuses, and we've got to figure out what we're going to be in the future.
Yeah. Steve Waldman is the founder and of Report for America, which I alluded to a minute ago. It came about, Steve, as I understand it, after you authored an FCC report titled Information Needs of Communities, which NPR described as one of the most comprehensive overviews of U.S. media ever produced. What was the impetus for that report, and what did it reveal?
Well, it was around the time that it looked like the New York Times might go out of business, and the digital revolution was sweeping across the country, and we really didn't know what the floor was. How bad was this? So they asked me to try to assess what should we really be worried about and what shouldn't we be worried about. And the gist of the report was to say national and international will probably be okay. The coming crisis is going to be local. Because the business models have collapsed and the new models hadn't emerged. And that led to, after I finished the report, working with a lot of other people. There's a tremendous number of people trying to come up with creative solutions. And I would go to these really sad journalism conferences every month about the state of affairs and how are we going to deal with this. And I kept having what I call acid flashbacks without the acid, to a period early on in my career when I actually briefly left journalism and worked at the AmeriCorps program, and wrote a book about AmeriCorps as well. And I kept having this feeling of, like, you know, there's actually something that the journalism world can learn from the national and community service world about the spirit of service, which I think has always been part of journalism, but we kind of grind it out of ourselves and needs to be recaptured, and even about some of the practical ways of helping communities. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of how that led to the idea for Report for America.
We're going to talk a little bit later on about how you view your organization, Report for America, as a service, kind of like the Peace Corps, in a few minutes. Which is the more serious threat, do you think, Susan, to healthy journalism? Is it challenges to traditional economic models, a rising lack of trust in traditional media, or the inability or the unwillingness to discern the quality of the sources from which people get their news? They just pick up their phone, and whatever's there, they read it and they believe it. Which is the more serious threat?
I think the reality of the economic change is really a big reason that we are seeing so many worrisome. I mean, if we can't pay for the news, if we can't make money on it, we're not going to have people really getting into it. Despite NPR and nonprofit media being important, they can't replace what happened in every community that were businesses. And the advertising model, I always like to quote someone who early in the moments when we realized there was so much change, he was running Hearst Media, and he said, "We didn't lose our audience. We lost our advertisers." I mean, 90% of advertising is on Facebook, Google, the platforms. And so that is a big shift. And they're not paying Alexandra for all her news gathering. They're not paying for that news, but they're benefiting from it. So I think the biggest issue is the economic model. But the other areas are also important. Trust. I'm trying to build trust every day. I'm trying to turn out young journalists who will live by the values of great journalism and start to rebuild that trust with the public.
And you mentioned a moment ago, Steve, that some of the major papers have been able to successfully transition in many ways to a digital platform, the New York Times certainly being one of them, and the Washington Post as well. And those are major big city metropolitan dailies. It's the smaller papers in local communities around the country that have not been so successful at making that transition. I'm just curious as to why that is, because a website is a website. A newspaper is a newspaper. And if you just shift your news coverage to a website and you're local and you're the only entity providing that information to people who used to read the paper but who still need the information, why haven't they been able to be as successful locally as the New York Times has been nationally?
Well, it really has to do with scale and size. The New York Times and Washington Post have succeeded by becoming national instead of local. They've been able to outrun the falling ad rates by massively increasing the size of the audience by going national and international. And when you're a local paper in Charlotte or Raleigh or Asheville and you're covering the school board, there's just a limit to how many people in Belgium or California are going to care about what happens at the Asheville Town Planning Board. Mm. So there's a natural cap on the size of your audience that a national publication doesn't have. And you combine that with the collapse of ad rates and the departure of advertisers towards Facebook and Google, and the model falls apart.
Can I add something there?
Sure.
I agree totally. In the New York Times, and when Steve did that report, none of us could believe that the New York Times might have folded. And so they're working on a lot of fronts. But let's talk about local news. The other thing that's happened is people are now paying for those digital subscriptions. The New York Times, when I was growing up, if they had a million people, that would have been a lot of people who were reading it. Now there are 4 million people around the world who are paying for their digital subscriptions. They're hoping to have 10. But let's talk what the change must happen in local communities. Whiteville, right there in North Carolina, in the southern part of North Carolina, has a newspaper that has been around for four generations. It won a Pulitzer in the 1950s by taking on the Ku Klux Klan, and they were just about ready to fold themselves. They were part of something at our school called the Table Stakes Project, underwritten by the Knight Foundation and the Lenfest Institute. And while they were with us over a year working on the specifics of a strategy of survival, really, they came up with some changes that they couldn't make before. And right now, 3 years later, their advertising base had fallen apart. They were getting pennies maybe on Facebook. They couldn't get the salesman at the Ace Hardware or the guys selling cars to buy in the paper anymore. But they changed their model, and they now have replaced their advertising dollars with subscriptions. So we're really talking about changing the economic model. Yeah. But you've got to offer something of value to your community in local news, and Whiteville is doing that.
I have less than a minute.
And unfortunately, you know, part of the problem was that right at the moment when folks like Whiteville were figuring out that the way to go is subscriptions, many other newspapers, especially the ones owned by chains, had so decimated their reporting staffs that they were no longer offering enough of value that people would want to subscribe.
Which is where Report for America comes in, I'll bet you. And when we come back, we'll talk about that with Steve Waldman. He's the president and the co-founder of that organization, which is putting young journalists in newsrooms all over the country, including our own, in the interest of full disclosure. Beginning in June, we'll have, I think, three journalists working at WFAE from Report for America. Susan King is also with us, the dean of the Hussman School of Media and Journalism at UNC Chapel Hill. And I'm told that we have reestablished our connection with Alexandra Watt. She's a young reporter for Report for America working for Mississippi Public Broadcasting, and we'll hear from her too when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the state of journalism and means the things that are being done to try to restore it to its former healthy state. Steve Waldman's one of those people in the forefront of that. He's the president and co-founder of Report for America, which we'll talk about in depth in a moment. Susan King is the dean of the Hussman School of Media and Journalism at UNC Chapel Hill. And Alexandra Watts is a reporter for a Report for America working at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. I asked asked your question, we lost you, Alexander, early in the program, so I'm going to come back to it because you came into this field of journalism after all the troubles we've mentioned became clear to those working in it. As business models began to collapse, as layoffs were beginning in news organizations of all stripes, as consumer choices began to change, as distrust in mainstream media sources became apparent and were replaced with social media sources in many cases, and journalists themselves became among the most distrusted people in America, you decided to become one. Why?
Yeah, I definitely came into journalism during a very interesting time. Countless times have I had people send me articles like, you may want to rethink your major, what else do you want to do? But, you know, I think it's actually really empowering. There's such a change going on in journalism right now. And most of my colleagues, I graduated with my undergrad in 2017, so I am fairly new to the field. But I think so many of us actually feel optimistic about what's going on. You know, you go on Twitter and you see the really amazing things that local reporters are doing across the country with not only their work, but engaging their communities and innovative things. And, of course, Report for America. You know, it's not the easiest thing to be a journalist right now, but I think the support that we have and the stories that we do and the response we see, it's definitely enough to keep going. You know, now that I know what's going on in 2020, if I could go back to my younger self, I would still major in journalism and do pretty much everything the same.
Because it pays so well. So
it's meaningful. Bravo, Alexandra.
So Susan King mentioned a moment. Susan King mentioned a moment ago, Alexandra, that a lot of her students don't watch television, they don't read newspapers, they get almost all of their news from social media. I'm curious, as a reporter for Mississippi Public Broadcasting, where do you get most of your news?
Well, I get most of my local news, of course, from my station. I also follow local publications like Mississippi Today, which is also a Report for America newsroom, and the Clarion Ledger. I would say public radio would be my main source of news, both for national, local, and then for my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona. So I would say mainly public radio, but I do hold a subscription to the local paper here, which is the Delta Democrat Times in Greenville. And my family still has a subscription back in Arizona to our local paper. Mm. With TV, I watch it occasionally, but I do still subscribe to my local paper, an actual physical paper.
And you also mentioned the Twitter a moment ago. Obviously, you're looking at reports from reporters that, and organizations that you trust. Not everybody is that discerning. So I'm wondering if you have any tips to just general people who also rely on Twitter to get their news about how to get their news from those reliable sources.
Well, I would say a lot of the journalists that I follow, I did happen to go to school with. So after graduation, you know, people took positions around the country in different newsrooms. So I follow them from that, you know, kind of like from college. But I would say, you know, just even going on to like an NPR's website and looking at stories that come from local affiliates and getting acquainted with those and following those stations. Then you start to kind of know their stories, and then you start to follow their journalists. So I think it's kind of, once you start really engaging with the newsroom, you really start engaging with the journalists. I also have the benefit being from two places. I'm living in Mississippi right now, but I still follow a lot of Arizona newsrooms. So I'm kind of involved in that local community, Phoenix, Arizona, too, to get my news.
So the paradigm is shifting in so many different ways all at the same time, and much of it driven by digital technology. And that's when journalism isn't the only industry in the country that's been affected by this. But in Report for America is, Steve, an effort by the Ground Truth Project, which describes itself as a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to supporting the next generation of journalists and to, quote, restoring journalism from the ground up. We've established that it's broken. How do you restore it?
Well, on some level, our solution is really simple. More reporters on the ground. There are other people who are doing really important work on the business models. Our contribution to this is none of this is going to work unless we have more reporters in the news deserts and covering undercovered issues and beats. That's important both to get information to citizens that they need to protect their families and decide who to vote for, and just a healthy functioning democracy. I think it's also important to help reestablish trust. We think that, you know, in addition to verification and transparency and other things that journalists are trying to do to reestablish trust, we think that part of that is being at the school board meeting and being seen at the school board meeting, working on stories that are relevant to other folks in the community, so that people again start to think of journalism as a profession that's watching out for them and their interests, and ultimately as a public service profession.
You know, just as people get really all tied up in presidential election races and are glued to the coverage of that, they tend to not pay much attention to their school board races or even know who their city council person is. Just as politics is all local, news really is local. And you're on the front lines of that, Alexandra, with Mississippi Public Broadcasting in the Delta there. Is this where rebuilding trust in the media begins, at the local level where you're touching people's lives and reporting on things that are actually impacting them right now in real time?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. For my work, I cover 18 counties of the Mississippi Delta, an area in Mississippi north, northwest region of the state. So it's definitely engaging with your community, which is why with Report for America, we also have a service project component that really gets us out there and engaging with individuals. But even separate from that, you know, even when I'm not technically on the clock per se, I'm still talking to people in my community, making connections, you know, always having not only just that active ear and making sure that I'm actually talking with people and listening to them as well. And I definitely say that even though I cover 18 counties, it has definitely paid off.
And I suppose it's another component to this because, Susan, you say that UNC Chapel Hill School of Journalism has revamped its curriculum in recent years so that students can learn the skills they need to succeed in a new media environment. How have the skills changed? You're still writing stories. You're still talking to people, asking questions. How have the skills changed?
First of all, we're storytellers on every medium, and I think that's I can find a good story covering the city council. It's not boring. It's not spinach. I just have to find that good story and then connect it and engage my audience. So what we're doing, the skills are changing in that we're making sure that students are able on many platforms. We've always had writing. We've been known as a great writing school, and that is the basis of everything. And every single student has to take a writing class. We call it 153, reporting and writing. But we also established another core class, audio and visual storytelling. Every student has to take that to learn the vocabulary of the visual, the vocabulary of the audio. Podcasts, my goodness, they're having their moment. They didn't exist when I started as dean, really. So there is a lot of change, and we are trying more than anything to build the skills of the students to not talk about what they're going to do as reporters, but to really do it, to become reporters, to have experiential learning. And we're also telling them that at the very essence is the audience. You must serve the audience. So I like the way Steve talks about that public service profession. I think if we engage audience, we have to offer them value, then maybe people won't feel like it's something that's free, that it's worth paying for. But we're moving them on the ethical front, the skill front, and it's an exciting moment because the audience can get much more depth than they've ever had before.
Who's responsible for people thinking that journalism is free? Yes, television news was free because there were three channels and advertisers supported, but newspapers were never free except for entertainment papers. You always had to have a subscription, and yet the paper was laden with advertising. So who's responsible for this paradigm shift where everybody thinking, yeah, that's free, I don't have to pay for that?
If you've been a young student with a telephone in the last probably 15 years, don't think anything costs.
Well, yes, but why did I remember back in the Pleistocene age when digital just started happening, I had a digital subscription to the Washington Post. It was called Digital Ink. And I paid, I think, $10 a month for it. And it was very rudimentary. It was literally nothing more than a list of stories and a couple of headlines and some paragraphs after each headline. But then one day I got this email from the Washington Post saying, we're migrating this to the web, whatever that was back then, and you no longer have to pay for it. And I'm thinking, are you crazy? So are news outlets partially responsible for this?
Steve, do you want to take that one?
Well, yes, but it was also tough to know when you were in the middle of it what the right choice was to make. Some of this was a kind of Silicon Valley mentality that don't worry about revenue right now. Worry about building audience. Mm-hmm. And that was what, you know, everything from Amazon to, Huffington Post or any kind of digital property had that attitude. It was a land grab. You know, try to build your audience. Don't worry about revenue. And eventually we'll get to the revenue part. And that led to, if that's your goal, is don't worry about revenue right now. Worry about building audience. Yeah, take off your paywall. Don't charge for anything. And it works in some businesses. You know, if you're an e-commerce business and you have that way of monetizing it, it works. But it doesn't work in the journalism world. And as Susan pointed out, the other thing that happened simultaneous to that I think when we were all making the decisions to go free, we thought, okay, well, we'll lose the subscription revenue, but we're going to have so much audience and we're just going to get a ton of advertising dollars.
Didn't happen.
Because of all this big audience. Well, the thing that then happened was that all the advertising went to Google and Facebook. If the advertising had actually stayed with the local media, we wouldn't be having nearly this crisis, you know, even without the subscription levels. It was the 1-2 punch of you know, not charging for things and then having the advertising model fall apart.
So given the realities of where we have been and where we are today and the fact that particularly local media outlets and particularly newspapers have been very impacted by this and not as successful as some of the national publications in establishing a foothold in the digital realm— and since newspapers did most of the heavy lifting when it comes to news stories and keeping governments honest and doing in-depth reports and investigative reporting, can digital sources take up the slack? I mean, is there anything to replace that kind of reporting out there right now?
So here's my take on that. And I just met with somebody who, you know, big-time businessman, but is involved in the environmental front and lives here in the Raleigh area. And he said the big change he sees is that when the newspaper used to do a major story and it was on the front page, everyone reacted. It had a major impact upon business. He could move his business forward, you know, the scandal, whatever. He doesn't feel anything is dominating the conversation, particularly Raleigh as a state capital. And we had scholars at the Hussman School that did this agenda setting. You know, newspapers particularly did agenda setting. Then the radio stations and the television stations would follow. There's nothing right now at this moment of transition that puts a whole community often around this one major topic. But I think there are opportunities. I think, first of all, news organizations, newspapers particularly, have to kind of partner with other players in town, like the public radio stations, so that when they do some blockbuster stories or just some legislative stories to keep us all informed about our government, they need to partner, not see it as a bad thing. You know, we used to all be competitive. You had to beat the other person on the journalism front. I think we need to partner more so the community is linked together by social media, by the radio station, even the television station, with what's going on. So, and I also am a broadcaster, so I'm biased. I did a lot of frontline reporting. Yeah. I didn't just read the paper and then read it on the air.
Well, you remember back when if 60 Minutes did a story that uncovered something we didn't know, and it involved the Congress on Sunday night at 7 o'clock, on Monday morning at 9, the Congress was taking action.
Right.
That doesn't happen anymore, even with a network news program like that.
Well, the other part of this, in addition to the kind of lack of dominance of a particular program or medium, is the shortage of reporting. You know, being digital or having things transmitted through your phone, that's not necessarily a problem. That's not really where the crisis is. It's that the stuff that is getting transmitted over the phone mm-hmm. is thin and lacking accountability reporting, especially the labor-intensive stuff that really requires a lot
digging.
Of effort. A
lot
of digging, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you know, I'm a little less worried about the platforms and the distribution style than I am about the underlying reporting. If I do, there's so much wonderful creative stuff going on with storytelling that if we can, but storytelling without the grist of the story, the reporting, is empty. And so if we can solve the reporting problem, and then combine that with the great innovations that are happening in storytelling, we'll be in good shape.
Something else that's been happening, which we think is new, in fact is not new, and that is this gravitation toward niche outlets who are giving you news from a point of view that in many cases you like because it confirms what you already believe. And that is not a new phenomenon. It was the newspapers used to be like this. And what changed that were advertisers in the newspapers, because advertisers
exactly.
wanted to reach as many eyeballs as they possibly could. So broadcasters and newspapers became very nonpartisan, which is, I think, where the trust in media came from. And now that we're gravitating toward these niche things where you have Fox News over here and MSNBC on the other side, and people perceive the New York Times to be a liberal paper, but the Washington Times is a conservative paper, that has led to distrust. How do you fix that?
One day at a time is my answer to that, because it is a big gap, and we need to have shared facts. And that's, I think, the real crisis at the moment is that people disagree with what the facts are or what truth is, or there's, you know, when do you really challenge someone to say, this is not the truth? And, you know, even Facebook is keeping lies on, you know, and things that don't agree. So that is a problem. And I totally agree with Steve. We do not have as many reporters there. About 3,000 reporters lost their jobs. But one day at a time, we've got to rebuild this and not give up what is the essential ingredient of our democracy, great journalism.
So when we come back, we'll talk about what Report for America is doing to rebuild this, not only around the country, but right here in Charlotte. We'll talk about that on Charlotte Talks in just a moment.
Did you know that Charlotte is hosting the Republican National Convention? It's true. And on January 23rd, WFAE is launching Inside Politics, a new podcast hosted by Steve Harrison and me, Lisa Wharf, about the RNC and the 2020 presidential race through the lens of Charlotte. Listen to the trailer and subscribe to Inside Politics now on NPR One and WFAE.org/InsidePolitics.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the state of journalism and one organization working to at least try to make a fix of some of the problems that we're facing. Steve Waldman is with us from New York. He's the president and co-founder of Report for America. Susan King is the dean of the Hussman School of Media and Journalism at UNC Chapel Hill, former correspondent, White House correspondent for ABC News. And Alexandra Watts, at the dawn of her career, a Report for America journalist at Mississippi Public Broadcasting in the Mississippi Delta. So let's talk about solutions. One of them may be what you are trying to achieve, Steve, with Report for America. And once again, in the interest of full disclosure, WFAE is participating with your organization. We will have three reporters, Report for America journalists, working with us beginning, I believe, in June. And as we mentioned earlier, your concept is to restore journalism from the ground up by supporting the next generation of journalists. So how does this work in practice around the country?
Well, we essentially run two competitions. We have a competition for emerging journalists who want to go out and do local news, local accountability reporting anywhere and everywhere in the country. We have slots in Alaska and Puerto Rico and everywhere in between. And the last class, the 50 reporters, we had 940 applicants for 50 slots.
Wow. Mm.
So it's a, you know, very it's competitive, but it also shows there's an incredible spirit of people wanting to do local journalism. It's not like, oh, that's boring. I want to be in Washington. This is the attitude I had when I was coming up. I want to be in Washington. These people are much more public-minded and get that the real need is out in communities. And then we have a second competition is the newsrooms have to compete too. They compete in order to get people like Alexandra Watts. What they have to do is prove to us, first of all, that they understand what the gap is in their community. They tell us what's the gap. It can be a geographic gap, like no one is covering these two counties anymore. Or it can be a community, the Latino community, the African-American community is not being covered. Or it can be a topic. So at the Charlotte Observer, Lauren Lindstrom is covering affordable housing, which wasn't, in their view, being covered well enough. And then we place we actually give candidates to the newsrooms. They make the final picks. And the reporters go in there. And then Report for America pays half the salary. The newsroom is on the hook for the other half, but we work with them to raise half of their half, so like a quarter, from the community.
And where does your money come from?
From philanthropy. So okay. The Knight Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Facebook, individuals, small and large. So we get money from all over the place of philanthropic sources, and then we put it back out into the community in these partnerships. Essentially, you know, we're partnering with newsrooms. So in North Carolina, which is we're actually going to have 11 positions in new positions in North Carolina. And the deadline, by the way, to apply as a reporter is January 31st. We're right in the thick of the application.
So given the intense competition, it's hard enough to get your first job or two in any business, but to go through the kind of competition that you have set up here where you narrow them down and then stations narrow them down further, and you have to make a pitch to get the job. Alexandra, you're in an elite group of people, so I'm just curious as to what your pitch was that got you this job.
Oh, wow. It seems like it was so long ago. I remember when I had my first interview with Steve, actually, I was on a reporting trip. I was on the Arizona-New Mexico border, and my service was just, like, really bad, but I had an interview scheduled. So I remember getting the phone call from him and being like, hey, you know, I'm sorry, this is kind of like last minute, but I really don't have like the best coverage right now. Can we reschedule? And Steve was amazing about that. And I think just going into my interview, just being completely honest, you know, I'm not from the Mississippi Delta. I had never visited Mississippi until my plane touched down when I first moved here. But I think, you know, having that passion for local news. And I came from a place where we have a public radio station, a public television station, multiple newspapers, you know. So going to a place that doesn't have all of those news resources, I felt like I was definitely so privileged and really didn't realize growing up all the resources I did have. So it kind of made me really want to bring that or contribute providing information for another community that might not be as lucky a bigger city.
So when you apply for Report for America, do you necessarily know, Alexandra, where you're going? Did you apply specifically to Mississippi Public Broadcasting, or could you have ended up in Peoria?
Well, I could have ended up anywhere, but when I first applied, Mississippi was the first on my list, so it all worked out. There were fewer newsrooms, of course, when I first applied 2 years ago, but I was really into radio and into public broadcasting, and that was one of the options, so it all worked out.
So when you're selected, Steve, to be a Report for America reporter, how long is the job?
It tends to be 2 years. It technically is 1 year with an option for a second year if the reporter and the newsroom want a second year, but most of them do. So it's looking like it's going to be for most people, a 2-year term.
So you're subsidizing for these organizations that pick up these reporters 50% of their salary. Could it be argued that you are? I suppose there are two ways to look at this. You're helping promote healthier journalism because you're putting more feet on the ground. But on the other hand, you may be depriving somebody from a job they might have gotten had you not been there. Is that at all fair?
Well, the jobs aren't there.
Okay.
You know, it's
right.
it's.
I just want to be clear about that.
Yeah. No. If this were a different era, you could certainly, you know, make that case. But the trend within newsrooms is all downward. So we're adding back some, okay. but not even, you know, not even but a fraction of what's
being
lost. And
can I add something, Mike?
Sure.
I think that the model of local public radio has been the community supports them. So your money comes, yes, some from Washington, mostly from your listeners. And
right.
there is a belief yeah. that you add value and it is worth it. And I think that that's part of the changing economic model. I was actually in philanthropy. I was 12 years at the Carnegie Corporation of New York and partnered with Knight to do a major initiative on journalism education because our board was very worried about the caliber of news and the trends. We had no idea what was ahead of us, this collapse. That's how I got into becoming a dean. But we didn't continue that. We actually closed down the program after 3 years. I argued that no issue a foundation cares about, whether it's education, whether it's poverty, whether it's housing, can be really engaging with their community unless there's journalism behind it. Mm. But there are very few people who are actually putting money around journalism. That's why I love Steve's program. I hope your community will see this. All those who are already supporting you see how important it is. We need to really sing that song that the community and deserves to support journalism in that community.
It's worth it. I have to say that as newsrooms have been decreasing all over the country in newsrooms of very different sizes and different kinds of publications and electronic media, etc., public radio has been increasing the size
yes.
of the newsrooms. NPR has still been able to float reporters all over the world, not use stringers and things like that necessarily in most places. They still have bureaus. Is the nonprofit model, is that the future of journalism, do you think, as opposed to advertiser support?
I don't think advertising is the future at all. Steve, do you disagree?
I don't disagree. I think nonprofit absolutely is a key part of the future. It's not the only part, but I strongly believe that this problem is only going to get solved if there is a bigger role for the nonprofit sector.
Agreed.
Now, that means small donations, big donations, foundations. It means mostly what, as Susan was saying, what the public radio model has proven, which is the community itself has to support it. And I think actually one of the problems we've had until recently was we had this sort of techno-utopianism where we kept thinking, oh, a new app's going to come along that's going to solve this problem. And the sooner we really face facts that the commercial model is not going to get back to where it was and that we have to start thinking about the nonprofit sector playing a much bigger role on the local level, the sooner we're going to solve this problem.
But, and I'd like to add one thing about advertising. We teach advertising as well. In fact, quite a few of our students are following that. Advertising right now that has moved to the digital world, we may then think everything is free or on a radio. We talked about that before. But in fact, we are the product. Everyone is tracking our data. It's not free. They know everything about us. And so the advertising is just being very micro-targeted.
Right.
I get different advertising than Alexandra does because of our different interests, our different ages, et cetera. And so we just can't expect that the future means we're going to get back the advertising we once had. It's a different market.
But in a world where this advertising model that supported journalism and entertainment programming on television, for that matter, that's collapsed and people are moving into streaming and away from commercials on TV, et cetera.
Right.
In that world where people think everything is free, why do you suppose some of those people support public broadcasting? Why do they give their dollars to public broadcasting if this stuff is supposed to be free?
Because you're really good at asking for it lots of times.
Yes, we are.
And you bring value. But I also want to tell you one other good story I started with. We have a small town newspaper that was almost ready to collapse. It, too, was part of this Knight-funded table stakes. See the foundation world, philanthropy again. They changed their advertising model to one that became support. They have school board dinners where they recognize student leadership. They've become sort of players in the education system in their town because that was in crisis as well as the newspaper. And they get supporters. They get money not as advertisers but as supporters. So there's still a commercial need, but it's got to be different.
So I threw
out. Well,
in
the community, I'm sorry.
That's
the,
okay.
The community. The news organizations need to be viewing themselves as community
Absolutely.
Conveners.
Yes.
And forces in the community besides, hey, here's some information. Some places are doing that by putting events as part of their business model. Actually, one of the most innovative models in the entire Report for America program is the one that WFAE is doing with the public library system and Wikipedia. They're having two Report for America core members. And part of what they're going to experiment with is having a combination of a reporter based at FAE and working with someone at the library to engage the community, sometimes using Wikipedia as the platform, to put out really high quality information about the community. So you got to do things like that that really expand the way you think of the role of
yes.
a local news organization.
And we'll also be working with La Noticia, that is the Spanish language newspaper here.
Yes.
I threw out some numbers at the very beginning. 28, you have reporters in 28 states in Puerto Rico, but this year you plan to increase that to 46 states with 164 news organizations involved. What do you believe the impact will be as you look back on this in 5 years of your program on both these young journalists, on the organizations they'll be working with and for, and on the quality and or the quantity of the news content that will be generated by these folks?
Well, I have this little recurring fantasy that I'm, I don't know, 5-10 years from now, I'm standing on a supermarket checkout line. And two people up, there's a person who's grumbling, maybe looking at the tabloid saying, damn, fake media makes everything up. And then the person right behind them, turns out, is a Report for America alumnus. And she taps him on the shoulder and says, actually, I was a Report for America core member, and that's not the way journalism works. I would wake up in the 3 a.m. in a cold sweat because I was afraid I misspelled someone's name. Forget about making something up. You have no idea how rigorous and committed we are. And I would just stand there quietly smiling behind them. So that's my fantasy for the kind of impact on a sense of trust. I think On a practical level, you know, if you have 1,000 reporters and they're each doing a couple hundred stories a year, that by itself is a massive improvement mm-hmm. in the amount of accountability reporting that is going on. That by itself, if we did nothing else, that would be a huge achievement. But the second goal relates to the kind of business model we've been talking about, which is we're putting a lot of energy into working with the local news organizations to develop their own local fundraising capacity and engage the community. So the hope would be that new money comes off the sidelines locally, and that can just be the same as the public radio model of local donors supporting
and
it, but it might be local foundations.
And let me give you a local foundation, the Fletcher Foundation here in the Raleigh area, who's supporting an education policy reporter here at WUNC Radio. We began it when I first became dean. It has to be a grad from our school. We have the fourth one here reporting, doing work on the legislature that wasn't being done before, so it's all plus for the radio station. And three of those who have already finished their 2-year stint here have jobs elsewhere in the country. So we've actually launched great young journalists same time.
I have 30 seconds left. And Alexandra, I want to end it with you. Alexandra Watts reports at Mississippi Public Broadcasting, Report for America journalist. Young people today are cynical, with some justification, about authority, about institutions, about many of the things that a free society needs in order to function. Do you see yourself as a reporter as playing a role in helping to restore confidence in journalism, or do you see yourself just as a reporter doing a job?
Oh, wow. What a way to end it. I think all of us are really doing the best that we can. I know one of the things to say is giving a voice to the voiceless, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I think everyone has a voice. Nobody is voiceless. But as a reporter, literally having my microphone to make sure those voices are amplified, I think we're all doing what we can. But
Alexandra Watts, I have to stop you there. She's a reporter for Report for America at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Susan King, Dean of the School of Media and Journalism at UNC Chapel Hill, and Steve Waldman, President of Report for America. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.